Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, yo, Elle, what time is it?
It's 7 o'clock. Why? What's up?
Hindsight time, that's what's up. Hindsight time. You already know.
Don't leave me. I'm trying to get my knowledge on, too.
That good old knowledge without a college, bro.
Don't be stingy with the knowledge.
You walking on slow? Let's get the hard stepping.
You know what time it is. Those who don't listen, special.
Real special. Real special. You know, I ain't old as I look, but I'm never too old to get that knowledge.
You are now listening to Hindsight Radio.
Because I got to tell you the truth, folks. I got to tell you the truth. When it comes to bullshit, big time, major league bullshit, you have to stand in awe of the all-time champion of false promises and exaggerated claims, religion. No contest. No contest. Religion. Religion easily has the greatest bullshit story ever told. Think about it. Religion has actually convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky who watches everything you do every minute of every day. And the invisible man has a special list of 10 things he does not want you to do. And if you do any of these 10 things, he has a special place full of fire and smoke and burning and torture and anguish, where he will send you to live and suffer and burn and choke and scream and cry forever and ever till the end of time. But he loves you. He loves you. He loves you, and he needs money. He always needs money. He's all-powerful, all-perfect, all-knowing, and all-wise. Somehow, just can't handle money. Religion takes in billions of dollars, they pay no taxes, and they always need a little more. Now, you talk about a good bullshit story. Holy shit. Thank you very much. But I want you to know something. This is sincere. I want you to know, when it comes to believing in God, I really tried. I really, really tried. I tried to believe that there is a God who created each of us in his own image and likeness, loves us very much, and keeps a close eye on things. I really tried to believe that, but I got to tell you, the longer you live, the more you look around, the more you realize something is fucked up. Something is wrong here. War, disease, death, destruction, hunger, filth, poverty, torture, crime, corruption, and the ice capades. Something is definitely wrong. This is not good work. If this is the best God can do, I am not impressed. Results like these do not belong on the resume of a supreme being. This is the kind of shit you'd expect from an office temp with a bad attitude. It's just between you and me. In between you and me, in any decently run universe, this guy would have been out on his all-powerful ass a long time ago. And by the way, I say this guy because I firmly believe, looking at these results, that if there is a God, it has to be a man. No woman could or would ever fuck things up like this. If there is a God, if there is, I think most reasonable people might agree that he's at least incompetent and maybe, just maybe, doesn't give a shit. Doesn't give a shit, which I admire in a person and which would explain a lot of these bad results. So rather than be just another mindless religious robot, mindlessly and aimlessly and blindly believing that all of this is in the hands of some spooky, incompetent father figure who doesn't give a shit, I decided to look around for something else to worship, something I could really count on. And immediately, I thought of the sun. Happened like that. Overnight, I became a sun worshiper. Well, not overnight. You can't see the sun at night. First thing the next morning, I became a sun worshiper. Several reasons. First of all, I can see the sun.
Okay.
Yeah. Unlike some other gods I could mention, I can actually see the sun. I'm big on that. If I can see something, I don't know, kind of helps the credibility along, you know? So every day I can see the sun as it gives me everything I need. Heat, light, food, flowers in the park, reflections on the lake. An occasional skin cancer, but hey, at least there are no crucifixions, and we're not setting people on fire simply because they don't agree with us. Sun worship is fairly simple. There's no mystery, no miracles, no pageantry, no one asks for money, there are no songs to learn, and we don't have a special building where we all gather once a week to compare clothing. And the best thing about the sun, it never tells me I'm unworthy. Doesn't tell me I'm a bad person who needs to be saved. Hasn't said an unkind word. Treats me fine. So, I worship the sun. But I don't pray to the sun. Know why? I wouldn't presume on our friendship. It's not polite. I've often thought people treat God rather rudely, don't you? Asking, you know, trillions and trillions of prayers every day. Asking and pleading and begging for favors. Do this, give me that, I need a new car, I want a better job. And most of this praying takes place on Sunday, his day off. Not nice. And it's no way to treat a friend. But people do pray, and they pray for a lot of different things. You know, your sister needs an operation on her crotch. Your brother was arrested for defecating in a mall. But most of all, you'd really like to fuck that hot little redhead down at the convenience store. You know, the one with the eye patch and the club foot, huh? Can you pray for that? I think you'd have to. And I say, fine, pray for anything you want. Pray for anything. But what about the divine plan? Remember that? The divine plan. Long time ago, God made a divine plan. Gave it a lot of thought, decided it was a good plan, put it into practice. And for billions and billions of years, the divine plan has been doing just fine. Now you come along and pray for something. Well, suppose the thing you want isn't in God's divine plan. What do you want him to do? Change his plan? Just for you? Doesn't it seem a little arrogant? It's a divine plan. What's the use of being God if every rundown schmuck with a $2 prayer book can come along and fuck up your plan? And here's something else, another problem you might have. Suppose your prayers aren't answered. What do you say? Well, it's God's will. Thy will be done. Fine, but if it's God's will and he's going to do what he wants to anyway, why the fuck bother praying in the first place? Seems like a big waste of time to me. Couldn't you just skip the praying part and go right to his will? It's all very confusing. So to get around a lot of this, I decided to worship the sun. But, as I said, I don't pray to the sun. You know who I pray to? Joe Pesci. Joe Pesci. Two reasons. First of all, I think he's a good actor, okay? To me, that counts. Second, he looks like a guy who can get things done. Joe Pesci doesn't fuck around. In fact, Joe Pesci came through on a couple of things that God was having trouble with. For years, I asked God to do something about my noisy neighbor with the barking dog. Joe Pesci straightened that cocksucker out with one visit. It's amazing what you can accomplish with a simple baseball bat. So I've been praying to Joe for about a year now. And I noticed something. I noticed that all the prayers I used to offer to God and all the prayers I now offer to Joe Pesci are being answered at about the same 50% rate. Half the time I get what I want, half the time I don't. Same as God, 50-50. Same as the four-leaf clover and the horseshoe, the wishing well and the rabbit's foot. Same as the mojo man. Same as the voodoo lady who tells you your fortune by squeezing the goat's testicles. It's all the same, 50-50. So just pick your superstition, sit back, make a wish, and enjoy yourself. And for those of you who look to the Bible for moral lessons and literary qualities, I might suggest a couple of other stories for you. You might want to look at The Three Little Pigs. That's a good one. Has a nice, happy ending. I'm sure you'll like that. Then there's Little Red Riding Hood, although it does have that X-rated part where the big bad wolf actually eats the grandmother, which I didn't care for, by the way. And finally, I've often always drawn a great deal of moral comfort from Humpty Dumpty. The part I like the best, all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. That's because there is no Humpty Dumpty and there is no God. None, not one, no God, never was. In fact, I'm gonna put it this way. If there is a God, if there is a God, may he strike this audience dead. See, nothing happened. Nothing happened. Everybody's okay. All right? Tell you what. I'll raise the stakes a little bit. If there is a God, may he strike me dead. See? Nothing happened. Oh, wait. Got a little cramp in my leg. And my balls hurt. Plus, I'm blind. Oh, now I'm okay again. Must have been Joe Pesci, huh? God bless Joe Pesci. Thank you all very much. Joe bless you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And now, Reverend Ike's third commandment of money. Thou shalt do right about money. Oh, that's important. It's important that you have the desire, the will, and the attitude to do right about money. And I want you to understand that in all my teaching and preaching about money, I am not talking about doing wrong things, dishonest things to get money or with money. Is the record clear? I'm not teaching you to do ungodliness and sin to get money. But you must have the attitude and the desire to do right about money. That means that you have the desire to even pay your bills. And this is another thing that will help you with money and even in paying your bills. I'm giving you some homework now. Every time you pay a bill, rejoice in paying that bill. Love and bless the telephone company, for example, for trusting you with their instrument. You can pick up that telephone and call anywhere on earth. Love and bless the gas company, the electric light company, for trusting you and giving you carte blanche with their goods and services. Now, I dare you to start doing this. Bless everybody that you owe. Bless the people that you're paying your bills to. And if you have some bills that you can't pay at the moment, I dare you to get those bills and put them somewhere where you can see them regularly and start blessing them and bless the people that you owe those bills to. Some surprising things will start happening in your life. Your bills will become easier to pay. You'll have more money to pay those bills, and you'll have a better relationship with your creditors. So say with me an affirmation that isn't on the lesson sheet, but it's good. I see myself rejoicing and paying all of my bills with ease.
I see myself rejoicing and paying all of my bills with ease.
I bless all of the people that I owe money to.
I bless,
I bless all of the companies who trust me with their goods and services. And I pay my bills with ease and rejoicing.
And I pay my bills with ease and rejoicing.
I send love with every payment.
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 Now I dare you to do that. And you're going to get so much money that you're going to have to bring it by the truckloads to church and pay your tithes from it. All right. Let's do the affirmation on Reverend Ike's third commandment of money. Let's stand and do it. Repeat it after me, because this clears the ear, the air. It's good to do this. Yes, it clears the ear too. That's correct. I am willing to do right about money. I have no need to do right. I have no need to do wrong about money.
I have no need to do wrong about money.
Or to do wrong to get money.
Or to do wrong to get money.
Thinking right and doing right about money draws more and more money unto me.
Thinking right and doing right about money draws more and more money unto me.
I pay my bills with joy.
I use money with joy.
Money has no power over me to make me do evil.
Money has no power over me to make me do evil.
I have all power over money.
To the Moore Empire Building Show with your host, Akeem F. on Hindsight Radio.
Peace to the gods. What's going on? You're listening to the Moore Empire Building Show with your host, Akeem L. on Hindsight Radio, the information station changing the nation. Hope everybody's doing well. Thanks for tuning in to tonight. Have a fantastic week so far. One announcement that I want to make. June 16th is our Atlanta seminar. That's featuring Jonah Bay and myself. We will be in Atlanta at our usual spot, Marriott Courtyard, downtown Atlanta Marriott. What a courtyard, Atlanta Marriott, downtown. That's at 133 Carnegie Way. The zip code 30303. Time will be from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. You go to akeemel.com, purchase your seats in advance, or you can pay at the door, but just bring cash if you come to the door. That's June 16th. I got time to prepare for that one. I just got in about an hour ago. I was on the road helping somebody get a car. So I got in and I started reading over some stuff and trying to figure out what I was going to talk about. And the ancestors did me some justice. They looked out for me, had me find something, to share with you guys. You know how we, been talking about nationality and how we got you putting down more Americans Aboriginal. On your paperwork. There's a reason for that. A lot of people have disputed on, we should put indigenous, we should be this. But I'm going to go to what they say they recognize. I'm going to go there. And also going to show you a few things, how they were able to get our lands away from us. You know, it was all by reclassification. Right here in Wikipedia, it's called Aboriginal Titles. I found this reading something else. It's two places I want to go, but I want to first, let's define Aboriginal Title. Aboriginal Title is a common law doctrine that the land rights of indigenous peoples, primary tenure, persist after the assumption of sovereignty under settler colonialism. So what's settler colonialism? Settler colonialism is a form of colonialism which seeks to replace the original population of the colonized territory with a new society of settlers, and with all forms of colonialism, it is based on exogenous domination, typically organized, supported by imperial authority. Settler colonialism, let me open this link up in the new tab here. awful. It's based on exogenous domination, typically organized and supported by an imperial authority. Settler colonialism is enacted by a variety of means ranging from violent depopulation of previous inhabitants to more subtle legal means such as assimilation or recognition of indigenous identity within a colonial framework. Unlike other forms of colonialism, the imperial power does not always represent the same nationality as, however, the colonizing authority generally views the settlers as racially superior to the previous inhabitants, which may give settler social movements and political demands greater legitimacy than those of colonized peoples in the eyes of the home government. The land is the key resource in settler colonies, whereas natural and human resources are the main motivation behind other forms of colonialism. Normal colonialism typically ends eventually, whereas settler colonialism lasts indefinitely, except in the rare event of complete evacuation or settler decolonization. Settler colonialism is generally discussed in terms of the one-way flow of British values, which overtake and repudiate the culture and history of the location in question. Transnational and global studies of settler colonialism often give more importance to the histories of British immigrants rather than the indigenous peoples that were displaced. Legal proceedings in Australia and Canada have challenged settler rights, highlighting the lasting effects of colonial takeover and the continued displacement of indigenous peoples at the start of the 21st century. In the United States, Western Australia, South Africa, government used land allotment as a legal way to take possession of indigenous peoples. There you go. That's pretty much what's happening, and it's still happening. Let me go back to Aboriginal title. The requirements of proof for the recognition of Aboriginal title, the content of Aboriginal title, the methods of extinguishing Aboriginal title, and the availability of compensation in case of extinguishment vary significantly by jurisdiction. Nearly all jurisdictions are in agreement that Aboriginal title is inalienable. Okay, what's inalienable mean? Let's look that up. Mom, oh, it's taking its time now. It's working fine. A minute ago. I'll stop that. Oh, it won't open up. It was, all right, I'm trying to get it to all come up. The word I just clicked, and now when I clicked inalienable, it gave me alienation property law. Property law is the voluntary act of owning some property. That's not what I clicked on. It says inalienable rights. Natural and legal rights are two types of rights. Natural rights are those that are dependent on the laws or customs of any particular culture or government, and so are universal and inalienable. They cannot be repealed or restrained by human laws. Basically, they're saying your rights to Aboriginal lands cannot be taken from you. All right? But they did it. How did they do it? They took it. They have the land. How were they able to do it? Let's keep going on. Let me just finish with this definition, and I'll go back to showing you how they did it. And that it may be held either individually or collectively. I'm on Aboriginal title now. Aboriginal title was first acknowledged in the early 19th century in decisions in which indigenous peoples were not a party. Significant Aboriginal title litigation resulted in victories for indigenous peoples did not arise until recent decades. Well, they're saying that they held all kind of made all kinds of decisions, but the Aboriginal wasn't even part of those decisions. It was making laws in their own favor. So basically, when I did the research, all of these new Aboriginal treaties they came up was in within the last less than 100 years. Prior to that, they was making rules to take land from people. And it was one key way they was able to do it. And we've been talking about it for weeks and months, how they did it. Keep going. Victories for indigenous people did not arise until recent decades. The majority of court cases have been litigated in Australia, Canada, Malaysia, New Zealand, and the United States. Aboriginal title is an important area of comparative law, with many cases being cited as persuasive authority across jurisdictions. Many commentators believe that the doctrine is applicable in all common law legal systems. Aboriginal title is also referred to as indigenous title, native title, particularly in Australia, original Indian title, particularly in the United States, and customary title, particularly in New Zealand. Aboriginal title jurisprudence is related to indigenous rights, influencing and influenced by non-land issues such as whether the government owes a fiduciary duty to indigenous peoples. While the judge-made doctrine arises from customary international law, applied nationally by legislation, treaties, and constitutions. And it goes on and talks about the British colonial legacy, which I'm not going to go into. Here's one case of the first indigenous land rights case under common law, Mohegan Indians versus Connecticut, was litigated in 1705 to 1773. That might be something good to read, because I'm sure if we dig out those cases, actually look at the cases, I'm almost positive that they weren't calling those people Indians. So I'm going to dig a little further to actually see the court case, because they're using this word Indian. We both know that Indian is not the proper word. Now, let's go to Aboriginal titles in the United States. Go there. I mean, if you guys are paying attention, we really got an action against this government and all these other governments for what they did, how they genocide. They did genocide, and they did physical genocide as well. See, they had to get you away from your true title, your true name, in order to do this. Because, okay, if there's Aboriginal titles, so you have to prove who you are, but if you're calling yourself something other than what you were called, how are you going to prove you was Aboriginal? That was why it was very important to create the birth certificate system to steal your nationality. Then it went into all of the tribes and burned down all of the original records, some of the courthouses. They burned down the courthouses, burned all the original records. So how do you prove who you are? You see? All right. Let's go back to where I was. Aboriginal title. Did I put this in the chat? Yeah, I just put it in the chat. Aboriginal title in the United States. The United States was the first jurisdiction to acknowledge the common law doctrine of Aboriginal title, also known as original Indian title or Indian right of occupancy. Native American tribes and nations established Aboriginal title by actual, continuous, and exclusive use and occupancy for a long time. Individuals may also establish Aboriginal title if their ancestors held titles as individuals. Unlike other jurisdictions, the content of Aboriginal title is not limited to historical and traditional land uses. Aboriginal title may not be alienated, except to the federal government or with the approval of Congress. So you see the fuckery here. They're saying it can't be alienated, but hey, the federal government can do it. How can they do it? How are they able to do it? Let's keep going. Aboriginal title is distinct from the lands Native Americans own in fee simple and occupy under federal trust. So they're saying Aboriginal title is distinct from the lands Native Americans. So they're saying Native Americans are not Aboriginals. So all of them motherfuckers walking around calling themselves Native Americans, they're not the same. The power of Congress to extinguish Aboriginal title by purchase or conquest, or with a clear statement, is plenary and exclusive. So they're showing you how powerful Congress is. How does the Congress get that power? We already know, 14th Amendment. Such extinguishment is not compensable under the Fifth Amendment, although various statutes provided for compensation. Unextinguished Aboriginal title provides a federal common law cause of action for ejectment and or trespass, which there is a federal subject matter jurisdiction. Many potentially meritorious tribal lawsuits have been settled by congressional legislation providing for the extinguishment of Aboriginal titles, as well as monetary compensation or the approval of gaming enterprises. Basically, they made deals. We give you the gaming, we'll give you this, but we're going to take that Aboriginal title from you. All right, large-scale compensatory litigation first rose in the 1940s and possessory litigation in the 1970s. See, you see where all of this shit started late? Well, after they had changed our title from Moor to Indian, and from Indian to Negro and all this other stuff they want to call you. And federal sovereignty immunity bars possessory claims against the federal government, although compensatory claims are possible by statute. The 11th Amendment bars both possessory and compensatory claims against states unless the federal government intervened. The U.S. Supreme Court rejected nearly all legal and equitable affirmative defenses in 1985. However, the Second Circuit, where most remaining possessory claims are pending, has held that latches bars all claims that are disruptive. What is latches? Latches refers to lack of diligence and activity in making a legal claim or moving forward or legal enforcement of a right, particularly in regards to equity. Hence, it is an unreasonable delay that can be viewed as prejudice in the opposing defending party. So they're saying, call Indian, or we can even say the Moors, we are under latches. We haven't been making our claim. But we're doing it now. When we tell you guys to go into this court and change that title, that nationality, get it done. By any means necessary, get it done. So that we won't be under latches. But see, we could beat that latches bullshit, and I will not go into it because it's giving away a trade secret. It will. We'll discuss it at a seminar. But latches, we are not under latches. Latches means you knew you had the opportunity to do something, but you did nothing about it. Well, what is it if you don't know? If you've been tricked, and that's all I'll say. Let me keep moving. All right, history. Before 1763, the colonial history of the United States was characterized by private purchases of land from Indians. Many of the earliest deeds in eastern states purport to commemorate such transactions. This is before 1763. Now, I showed you guys, we showed you paperwork around this time and a little bit later that they were referring to Indians as Moors. So you know this is bullshit because by them keep using this word Indian. I promise you, if I find that court case, they are not calling those people Indians. I promise you, I'm going to find it. All right. The Royal Proclamation of 1760 changed matters, reserving for the crown the exclusive right of preemption, requiring all such purchases to have royal approval. It was also an attempt to restrain colonial settlements west of the Appalachian Mountains. Now, remember, I talked about the Appalachian Mountains, the Indians, and they were Moors, and they gave all those descriptions. It was a few weeks ago. Forged versions of Pratt York Opinion of 1757 in its authentic form, a joint opinion of Britain's Attorney General and Solicitor General regarding land purchases in India, was circulated in the colonies, edited such that it appeared to apply to purchases for Native Americans. See, now they're flipping it to this Native Americans. I just told y'all Aboriginals were different from Native Americans. The Royal Proclamation was among the enumerated complaints in the Declaration of Independence. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states for that purpose raising the conditions of new appropriations of land. Articles of Confederation era. The Confederation Congress Proclamation of 1763 prohibited the extinguishment of Aboriginal title without the consent of Congress. Particularly New York purchased lands from tribes during the period without the consent of federal government. These purchases were not tested in court until 1970s and 1980s, when the Second Circuit held that the Confederation Congress had neither the authority under the Articles of Confederation nor the intent to limit the ability of states to extinguish Aboriginal title within their borders. Thus, the proclamation was interrupted to apply only to the federal territories. So if you was under federal territories, that's the only place it applied, which most of us, if you hold an associate, you under the federal territory. See, by that time, they got everybody under federal jurisdiction. Why? They issued them a birth certificate and a social. So they was under the federal territory. States lost the ability to extinguish Aboriginal title within the ratification of the United States Constitution in 1788, which vested authority over commerce with American Indian tribes in the federal government. See, you notice that all of these treaties, all of these things they came up with is with the quasi-Indian, the 14th Amendment Indian. Congress codified this prohibition in the Non-Intercourse Acts of 1790, 1793, 1796, 1799, 1802, and 1833. Marshall Court made Aboriginal title in the Marshall Court. Marshall Court, 1801, 1835, issued some of the earliest and most influential opinions on the status of Aboriginal title in the United States, most of them authorized by Chief Justice John Marshall. Without exception, the remarks of the court and original title during the period of dicta. Only one indigenous litigant ever appeared before the Marshall Court, and there Marshall dismissed the case for lack of original jurisdiction. See? Only one litigant came. Might because they didn't know. Fletcher v. Peck, 1810, and Johnson v. McIntosh, 1823. The first and most detailed explorations of subject by Marshall, respectively, both arose out of collusive lawsuits where land speculators deceived the court with a falsified case and controversy in order to elicit the desired precedent. In Cherokee Nation versus Georgia, 1831, and Worcester versus Georgia, 1832, the dicta of Marshall and the dissenting justices embraced far broader view of Aboriginal title. I suggest y'all go and read these cases. I will be. Johnson involved a pre-revolutionary private conveyances from 1773 and 1775. Mitchell v. United States, 1835, involved 1804 and 1806 conveyances in Florida under Spanish rule. In both cases, the Marshall Court continued to apply the rule that Aboriginal title was inalienable except to the Crown. Removal era. Further information. Indian removal. The Indian Removal Act of 1830 established policy that resulted in the complete extinguishment of Aboriginal title in Alabama and Mississippi, 1832, Florida and Illinois, 1833, Georgia, North Carolina, and Tennessee, 1835. The Treaty of New Acada, Indiana, 1840, and Ohio, 1842. See, they could extinguish your title if they changed your title or your nationality. Reservation treaty and termination errors. Further information, Indian reservation and Indian termination policy. This shift in policy resulted in all tribal lands being either ceded to the federal government or designated as an Indian reservation in Iowa, Minnesota, Texas, and Kansas by 1870. Idaho, Washington, Utah, Oregon, Nevada, Wyoming, Nebraska, and Colorado by 1880, and Montana, Arizona, and New Mexico by 1886. Whereas it had taken whites 250 years to purchase the eastern half of the United States, they needed less than 40 years for the western half. Unlike the eastern purchases, some of the transactions in the west involved immense areas of land. More than 75% of Nevada, for example, was acquired in two bites, the large majority of Colorado in three. It was not long before the west was dotted with Indian reservations. So what they're saying is, if you understand what we've been teaching, they're saying that we as Moors was all over. Colorado, Utah, we were everywhere. Laws, they were able to take our lands through federal policy once they was able to change who you were as a person. As you look at these dates, 1870, remember, it was 1868 when Pitchfork Ben Tillman and them went on their crusade to create the 14th, 15th Amendment to make you a slave. These years all coincide. Let me keep going. Congress banned further Indian treaties by statute in 1871. That was shortly after what? 18th treaty-like instruments continued to be used to alienate Indian land and designate the boundaries of reservations. Language in 1881 Indian Country Bill referring to lands to which the original Indian title was never been extinguished was struck by its sponsors who claimed that there was no such lands in the United States. In 1887, the Dawes Act introduced an allotment policy whereby community reservation lands were divided into parcels held in fee simple and thus alienable by individual Indians with the surplus as declared by the government sold to non-Indians. Allotment ended in 1940s. The Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, 1971, extinguished all Aboriginal title in Alaska, although the Legitimacy Act remains it disputed by some Alaskan natives. Indian land claim settlements extinguished all Aboriginal title in Rhode Island, 1978, and Maine, 1980. According to Professor Stuart Banner, the story of Indians and land over the past 6 years has primarily been that of tribes' efforts to get land back or to be compensated for land wrongfully taken. Indians have directed land claims at every branch of the federal government, at Congress, Interior Department, and for the 1940s to the 1970s, at the purpose-built administrative agency called the Indian Claims Commission. Some of these claims have been remarkably successful, culminating either directly in court judgments or indirectly in legislative settlements. Basically, they settled some of these claims in secret. But I can tell you a large reason why a lot of these people were losing because they're coming in as Indians. This is why they don't want you to become a Moor again. They don't want to resurrect that because if that's resurrected, there's nothing they can do. Nothing. I'm gonna definitely look up that case. Where is that case? I need to see that case, not on Wikipedia. I need to look at it through the Law Library and look at it if it's still up there. Let me see if I can pull it up. Here it is right here. I might get lucky. What I'm going to do, I'm going to take a short break, and I'll be right back.
Keeping an eye on the government is critical to keeping the government in its place. But while government loves keeping an eye on us, it hates it when we keep an eye on it. And it's been easier to do so. It makes it more dangerous. More and more citizens are recording their interactions with the police using simple and perfectly legal devices like their cell phones. And the cops don't like that one bit, increasingly resisting the tapings with force and even jail time. Take a look at this.
Get off the motorcycle. Get off the motorcycle. Get off the motorcycle. State police. See your hands. Put your hands up.
That's a video a Maryland motorcyclist recorded when he was pulled over for speeding by a cop, not wearing a uniform, not showing a badge, but with a gun drawn. The motorcyclist got a ticket and was so upset about the incident, he posted the video online. You won't believe what happened next. Days later, his home was raided by Maryland State Police, who confiscated his computer and arrested him. He's been charged with two felonies for allegedly violating Maryland's wiretapping law. He faces 16 years in jail. This is in the United States, not in North Korea. Reason Magazine's Radley Falco has been reporting on this story and this disturbing trend. He joins me now. Radley, welcome back to Freedom Watch. We always have you on when the police are doing the most god-awful things. What is happening here in the United States? Are the police actually claiming that when they stop someone for what they say is a crime or a traffic infraction in public, that they, the police, have some right to privacy at that moment, at that place, at the side of the road, and that they can't be filmed when doing it?
Well, that was the argument in this case, Judge. But actually, a Maryland judge has since thrown the charges against Anthony Graber out. But here's something to consider. The prosecutor in that case was wrong on the law. The state police were wrong on the law when they raided this guy, wrongly arrested him, wrongly jailed him. This guy had two felony charges hanging over his head for months.
Right.
Now, a Maryland state judge ruled that they were wrong on the law and he was right. Now, think about this. If he had been wrong on the law, he could have gone to jail for 15 years or more, right?
Right.
He was right. They were wrong. What's going to happen to them? Absolutely nothing. He can't sue them. It's almost impossible to sue a prosecutor. It's very difficult to sue the police.
Right.
And they're not going to be disciplined or sanctioned in any way. There is a huge, this arresting people for videotaping the cops, that's a bad enough issue in itself. There's also this double standard about citizens are supposed to know the law front to back.
Exactly.
But the people actually charged with enforcing it aren't expected to know the law, and I think that's a huge problem.
Here's another good example. Here's another example of taping cops. Here's a bicyclist shoved off his bike by a cop, the officer not knowing that he was being filmed. He intentionally knocked the bicyclist off. After the video went viral, watch this, we're doing it in slow motion, the officer was charged with filing a false criminal complaint. Ooh, a cop pushing a guy innocently and lawfully on his bike. Now, that guy was prosecuted, that cop, because he lied under oath and filed a false incident report, and he was convicted, Radley. So there's a just outcome.
It is. As I understand it, he was actually acquitted on the charge of assaulting the bicyclist. But
convicted lying.
Filing the false report. That's right. But, that case illustrates why this is important, Judge. I can rattle off a dozen cases where citizen shot video has actually shown police officers to have lied on police reports.
Here's one more. I want you to watch this one with us. In this incident, a Washington, D.C. cop got angry that his car was hit by a snowball, by some residents having a friendly snowball fight. He gets out and he draws a gun. Watch it, and we're going to show the part with the gun in slow motion. That's the cop doing the pushing.
What? He's got a gun?
All right. When confronted about this incident, the officer denied that he drew his gun, and his bosses in the police department backed him up until the video went online and went viral. So how do these cops get away with this? Why do the police departments back them up when there's evidence out there that they didn't tell the truth? In this case, committed a crime by threatening to use deadly force over a snowball fight.
Well, it's really incredible. In that case, the spokesman for the D.C. Police Department actually went to the media and flat out denied that this officer had pulled a gun. He said that the people there must have mistaken his radio for a gun. And it wasn't until the videos hit the web that story was proven false. In a lot of these cases, also, Judge, the police will confiscate the cameras, and they'll actually delete the photos and videos that were taken of the incident. I actually have some friends who last year, I think actually they've been on your show,
right?
Who were arrested in Mississippi last year and took video of that incident. When they got the video camera back, the video had been deleted. They actually took the video to a tech guy who was able to retrieve the video. So we now know that somebody in the Jones County, Mississippi Sheriff's Department deleted evidence in a criminal case. That person needs to be prosecuted.
You know,
the judge
called?
And the DA there need to be investigated.
That's called obstruction of justice. People can go to jail for that for 20 years, whether they're cops or civilians. Radley Balco, thank you for joining us. Boy, it is just amazing that in a free society you can't record public servants going about their so-called public service. They work for us, and we deserve to know what they're doing. To that end, police in particular, you know this, we just saw it, have been known to trample the constitutional rights of people all the time. What you have a right to know is that you absolutely can video and audio tape them. The police routinely violate the Constitution when they pull over your car or stop you on the street. They ask you intrusive questions that you don't have to answer. They sometimes even rough people up. They push them off their bicycles. They threaten them with guns. They basically treat you like you're guilty of a crime before you've even been charged or convicted of one. The Constitution protects you from this type of police behavior. And many Americans have realized that policemen, often not caring about the Constitution, need to be photographed. So courageous Americans have decided to video and audio tape their interactions with law enforcement as a way to protect themselves from police mistreatment or to prove what happened. Yet big government is so afraid of people recording the police, it tries to ban the practice. This is completely unconstitutional. The First Amendment guarantees our right to free speech. That includes the right to listen to and record what happens in public. Cameras and recording devices are simply modern-day note-taking. And if people are using them to keep the police honest, to tell the truth about law enforcement abusing rights, then it is the right of the people to record these affronts to the Constitution. For the government to record us is Orwell's 1984 come true. For us to record the government is a public right and a smart thing to do.
You're listening to the Moore Empire Building Show with your host, Akeem F. on Hindsight Radio.
All right, peace of God. I'm back. Had to take a little break there. They robbed us. We've been robbed. We've been bamboozled. We've been tricked. And I don't even know if I want to call it pulling a wool over eyes. Shit, they pulled the whole damn planet over eyes. Yeah, you know, a lot of us think we wasn't born and we knew that we were Moors, that our ancestors are the original aboriginals of this land. You know what I'm getting sick of? There's a lot of people in this movement that just want to get on these lines and they want to just yap about what they know, information they've been, you know. And a lot of stuff, a lot of times they get in and say something that ain't even relevant to the conversation of what we're talking about, you know. And these same people ain't doing jack shit to free themselves, but they just want to be heard and talk. Listen, I don't know about everybody else, but I'm tired of being in this position. And when I'm tired of something, I do something about it. I make moves to make my situation different. I don't get it where, you know, people just love talking about the problem, won't do nothing about the problem. But they like to bring up, you know, little things, patriotic things they done read and talked about that. That won't even change anything. You heard with this last recording, you got to use that Constitution. This is how we're going to get out of it, through the very contract that they committed themselves to defend. All right. Let's take a call. All right. I don't know how long I'm going to go tonight. I'm going to go. If you want to got something to say, press 1. Or Forever hold your peace. 585-730.
Peace to the gods.
Peace to the gods. What's going on?
Nothing. Reading that put a lot into perspective, and I know you just brought up the Pitchfork Tillman, and I just think this 14th Amendment thing is like it's just really holding us back, and I wouldn't even say they pulled the wool over our eye. It's like you drunk, like we drunk the juice, and we just allowed ourselves to get mesmerized and, you know, I guess bamboozled by the lies. And I don't know what kind of shiny things they might have showed us.
Let me ask you a question. How did they bamboozle you?
Well, I wouldn't say, I don't know. I guess to honestly answer that, I kind of would take that defense of that generational thing. You know how, like, I guess with the church, how you never really knew about Jesus or the church, but you only knew through what your parents was teaching you and things like that. So I don't know. I guess I was bamboozled through my family. My family was bamboozled, so it just ran down on me too.
No, they didn't. I mean, in their defense, they didn't do it intentionally.
Who?
Parents, your aunts, you know, they went on a system
they know,
of
that's what they know.
They only went on what they thought was right. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
when you know better,
kids,
you do better.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If I don't look for the truth, if I don't know where to look for the truth, how do I know what the truth is?
Well, I know something. I hear a lot of like callers call in, and even people I've had discussion with, people always say, I know something wasn't right. I just feel it inside of me that something isn't right. So, you know, you try to take yourself out of the situation, but then you get like you get backlash sometimes. Cause
you're listening to the More Empire Building Show with your host, Akeem F. on Hindsight Radio.
Peace to the gods. I'm late getting in. I had to play a little old clip. I had some things to take care of. You know, we're getting ready to get out of here tomorrow. Go to Texas for this private seminar. First seminar, series of seminars coming up this month into July. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to take a few calls and I'm going to have to get off because I still got things to do. So I left y'all a little something to listen to while I was working on some things. All right, let's get to it. Let's see. Let's go to 510-593. Peace to the God.
Peace. How you doing?
Doing all right. Peace.
Man, I was I've been trying to get the info on somebody's site about the California seminar. I haven't seen it.
It's not going to be up there probably until next week. I got the flyer already, but I'm not, because we have two seminars ahead of that. So we do them consecutively. We have Atlanta, and then we have Connecticut, then we have California. So it'll be up there. I can tell you it's going to be in Burbank, California. That's as much as I can tell you.
What's the date on it again?
It'll be the first week in July. I'm not sure what day that is. July 7th, something like that.
Oh, okay. Because, like, people in the Northern California, you have to realize that's probably a 10, 15-hour drive. So, well, that depends on where they're at. But I was just trying to get a heads up, so, you know, trying to make accommodations, stuff like that.
It's coming. It's first week in July, Burbank, California. That's the location. So you can make it's that first weekend coming up in July, right after we do our Connecticut seminar.
And did you already have a price for it?
Yeah, that's probably going to be around 250.
Okay. And you could do that at the door?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Cash only at the door.
Okay. Hey, guess what? I was down south last week, and I had noticed that like the counties, I was in Mississippi, but like a lot of the states, I was realizing that like if you notice a lot of the counties that have like indigenous connotations, whether it's a name or like a tribe or something like that.
Yeah.
A lot of those counties will have cities named, like, for instance, like Carthage. Carthage is the Carthage in North Africa that was part of the Moroccan Empire. There was like whatever, but also it's a Carthage out here. And I just think stuff like that, it just
well, that you go look up the exotic map on the internet, you'll see a lot of places here have the same names as places over in Africa.
Yeah.
I see exactly the same. Egypt, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Israel. Mm-hmm. There are towns that are named those same names here in the North America.
Yeah. And, also, oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So for the seminar, the one in California that's gonna go A to Z on how to get to the finish line.
That's the nationality seminar teaching you how to put in your paperwork.
Oh, okay. Does that include like the non-UCC?
No.
Okay.
Non-UCC, but a webinar. Why would we do a seminar on a non-UCC when we got a webinar there for people to be and charge you to come talk about non-UCC? You got a webinar sitting right there on the website.
But isn't that like part of it? Don't we need to do that?
No, we're not, brother. You asked me the same questions several times, and I answered you. It's strictly on how to put in your paperwork for nationality.
Okay.
All right.
All right. All right.
Yeah, I'm back. I had to step away real quick.
Yeah.
You got any more questions, bro?
Yeah. So, is there any like thing that you've noticed across the state? You know, like
stand by a second, bro. Stand by 1 second. All right, what was that you was asking?
I was asking if there was any like common like road bump or something that you had seen in like consulting people that have been trying to go through the process, like from different states. Like, is it any type of like common thing that you've seen that you could like speak on to like the nationality?
Brother, I'm not talking about no details about nationality. If you want details on nationality, you got to come to the seminar. All right?
Okay.
All right. Peace. Trying to, got some. I don't know. People trying to communicate with me. all types of measures. All right, 510-374. Peace to the gods. Peace to the gods.
You know what, Akeem? I'm tired of this shit too, man.
Yeah.
Real talk, man. I got some lawsuits going on, man, and Joe, I hollered at Joey about this shit, man. It ain't no winning this shit, man, because we Kwanzaa.
You gotta get,
you know, I agree.
In order to come out of
so tired of this shit.
First of all, US citizens can't question nothing. You gotta make a distinguishment between you and that 14th Amendment.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Mm-hmm. Overstood. That's why I can't wait for y'all brothers to come out here to this seminar. I've been patiently waiting, man.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Ali got to get this shit right, man. I'm tired of this shit, bro. Even having to having it on my mind is bothering me. It's frustrating. Knowing that I can't even make no move, they hold me down. Man, I don't like to be held down, man.
Oh, you can make moves. You just gotta, you know, take one step at a time. You know, what
yeah,
is it you're trying to do exactly?
Man, the nationality, bro. That's the main thing. That's the grand prize.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I've been doing my discharge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I've been doing that, and I got my IRS, my webinars and all that shit. I've been, you know, my whole, everything. Man. I've been doing a little shit, but it's like I want that major step. I gotta have that big fight, man. Cause it's a lot of shit sitting on my plate, man. I can't even get to because of this bullshit, man.
Right.
You know, so let's listen in, man.
One step at a time, you get there, brother. One step.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but I'm doing my IRS shit right now because the tax board for the barber shit, they had sent me a few letters because they're trying to get some money out of me. So
the tax
I got
board
the,
or the barber board?
Yeah, the barber board.
The barber board? When did they get involved with taxes?
Man, they because I'm cutting inside this other brother's shop, doing business with this other brother. And I guess he has to report how many barbers is in his shop or whatever.
Do they make y'all get a license by yourself?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what I mean is get a separate business license, not a barber's license.
No, it's not no separate business license.
Okay.
I probably need to get a consultation with you on that.
It makes him rat y'all out.
Yeah, man. I'm looking at this clown like, you motherfucker.
Yeah,
ladder me out, but I guess that's the way he got to do
really
it.
Really,
that hurts
him because they're gonna want to know how much that lets them know how much booth rent he collected.
Man, it's all fraud. It's all type of fraudulent shit going on or at this barbershop, man. As far as like the licenses and booth rent and all that shit, I'm just trying to get my cheese and get the fuck up out of there, man. For real.
Right.
I don't want to even be working. I don't even want to be doing no barbershop shit once I get this knowledge, man, about this, about how to do this, this nationality and shit.
Yeah, I hear you, bro. It's frustrating, but we got to keep, you know, moving forward. That's all. That's all we got to do.
Yeah, I just felt like that today, man. I just felt very frustrated today, man, about this shit. Because I've been studying and filing motions and back and forth to court, and these pale faced motherfuckers just keep looking at me and laughing and smirking, and I know they're
part of a club, you know. But that club is coming to an end. They can smirk all they want. It's coming to an end. Their little games is on its way out.
No doubt. No doubt. So once the nationality, I can go back. Once I get that situation, I can go back on them cases, no matter how old they is, right?
You can try to, but that's going to be very difficult trying to win them old cases because they've already been closed out, although technically they never closed. you know, but, you know, what you have to do is do a motion to vacate the judgments. You know, you got a lot of work to do. You know, in my opinion, it's better to, you know, just keep moving forward. You know, look at those situations as experience.
Right. But I don't mind putting in the work and studying, man. I love it. I find it, you know, very intriguing to me. But, you know, when I, you know, get to putting in the work and going in the gym, studying, and then I get to the fight, and the referee get these motherfuckers the title, it's like, damn. It's like, the fuck?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If that's what they do.
Frustration set in.
They cheat. They cheat for each other. Cheaters.
Yeah. But I ain't going to hold the line, man. I'm probably going to get me a conversation with you, brother.
Okay.
Get on some topics. All right, peace.
Okay, cool. 407-668.
Peace. You can hear me?
Peace. Yeah, I can hear you now.
Peace to the God. What's going on, God?
Not much. What's going on?
Not much, man. Peace to hindsight. Peace to you, man. All the work y'all doing. I know it's shit frustrating. But,
you know what I mean?
I know, man. I know. Working with people, but I think that's...
When did he ask you the same question? Several times, you know, hey, listen, man.
I peeped that shit. I peeped that.
Bro, you try to just listen. Like, I don't know, you're asking me the same thing in a different way?
Everybody knows, bro.
Come on.
Everybody knows.
You want to know about nationality and what's going to be done, go to the seminar. That's how that works. You can't be showing our cards here on the air. Huh?
You're damn right. I said I went to a seminar. You know what I mean? So
didn't you go like a couple of times?
Huh?
You went a couple of times, didn't you?
Nah, you ain't confusing me with somebody else, Hakeem. It's all good though.
Maybe it's your voice. I don't know. Yeah, you went. I know you went once.
I went down in Florida. We met in Florida.
Right. Okay.
Down in Tampa. Yeah. But the question I had, you know, I'm going to try to sum it up as quick as possible and condense it, Akeem. It ain't no short question, but check it. I'm starting a business, right, with another partner, right? I just say two people starting a business, right? And I have a credit privacy number that I use, and I also have an EIN under my 9-8 that I have. I have two of them, right? So now this person wants to pretty much deal publicly. But I said if you interface with me, it will be in the form of a partnership to a private company or to a credit privacy number. Now, I was asking you, what would be the best interface to interface with that in that partnership? How would be the best interface for me if we're not going to go totally private?
What number?
I'm going to remain private.
What number you want to use in that business is what you're asking? In a partnership?
Or in a sense of what number, but in a sense of should you come into it as a business or should you just come with it under that other name which is not in their system? You feel me?
If you're doing any business, you're going to need an EIN.
Okay.
Right? Because that's, you're going to need that. So a CPN won't be effective in that sense.
Okay.
What you would do is do your 9-8 number, get an EIN number, and you're not connected, and use that in that business or partnership.
And that would just pretty much be the responsible party for that business and control the
affairs. Well, your 9-8 number would be the responsible party.
But now how would I – so in that EIN as a business, I would be interfacing with that business as what?
Yeah.
That's what I would
– as whatever name you want to call it. You want to give it a name like any other business.
Got it. Makes sense.
But the key is you're going to have – you have to use a normal EIN in that situation because you're conducting business with another entity that's doing business. Y'all partnering up.
Okay.
You can't use
now,
VPN.
Dan, that led me to another question.
You made up. Yeah.
Now, the EIN was made as a partnership, right? But he made it so it's public, right? But it's made as a partnership, right?
Who's the guy?
Now,
who's the responsible party, the one he made?
The one that he is. Got me?
Okay, so he uses social to get that, okay.
Exactly, exactly. You understand, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now my EIN will interface with that EIN, correct?
Yeah, that, yeah, but yours will be private, his won't.
Absolutely. That's what we discussed.
You,
now,
they'll come at him for taxes, but you, they can't.
Exactly. I already explained that. And but brother's going to come around on their own speed, so I let that
mm-hmm.
live. But now, would that be a private contract, or would we now put that on the EIN paperwork as a partnership between this EIN and that EIN?
Yeah, you.
Or would that still remain private?
What you would do if y'all going to be a partner, right?
Mm-hmm.
You would create a partnership through one of the other businesses, whatever business you're going to
mm-hmm.
create a partnership with. And then you can kind of make this business partnership by like you take your EIN and you set up
uh-huh.
a partnership with your EIN number. And then when it
okay.
asks who the responsible party is, you're going to use your 98 number. And then you're going to put, because a partnership got to have its own EIN anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you're not going to use this EIN that he has. Y'all going to
yeah.
have a separate partnership EIN. You see
got
what I'm saying?
So, he has
so if you set it up, you set it up and create a partnership with him, because you did yours private, the whole partnership would be private. Don't let him set it
okay.
up. You set it up.
Exactly. You know, I was, and I guess, you know, they still got their minds sort of, you know, in the public. So, you know, that's, I'm not going to battle that, but business is business, you feel me? So I'm like, all right, I'll interface it, but I have to interface it in the private method. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Best as I can. His partnership right. will interface with my private partnership, and that's how we will
right.
conduct business.
Word. Yep.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that, God. And I hope y'all paying all attention, right. man. So peace to the God.
All right, peace.
Word.
All right, it is 803-673, what's up?
Peace to the God.
Peace to the God, what's going on, Xavier?
Not much. I was just tuning in to, you know, listen.
Oh, you got your hand up?
Yeah, I was.
Oh, okay. You got your show tomorrow evening. Y'all got to tune into that show. Well, I know London ain't going to be on because he's out of town. Every Friday, Freedom Fridays, with Akeem L. Jr. Tune in, 7 o'clock, you know, show some support for the young brothers.
Yeah.
You know, this is for the young audience and, you know, people to tune in. He had a different perspective than me and Jonah. Yeah. So, all right, what else is going on?
Not much. Just, you know, I had to do some paperwork
well, you
today.
That appeal webinar, is that appeal webinar up on your website yet?
Yeah, it's been up for a couple weeks now.
Oh, okay. Notice of appeal. How to do your appeals if you're getting turned down. He got the webinar to show you how to do your appeal. What's your website?
XavierL.com.
Okay. All right. XavierL.com. There it is.
Yep.
Man.
Oh, God. All
right. I think I'm gonna make this a short night because I'm winding down.
Don't y'all leave out tomorrow?
Yeah, tomorrow afternoon. Yeah, I'm gonna take one more call and then I'm off. All right. No, peace. Well, you can stay on. I'm about to take the next call. 310-403.
Mr. Hill, what up?
Hey, what's up? Peace.
Peace. Yeah, well, since you just mentioned it, since your son was on about that appeals webinar, that's, you would probably recommend that for those of us that don't really have experience in appeals for doing this nationality. Is that something that would be helpful?
Yeah, it works for all appeals, how to do your appeal.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, mm-hmm. Well, I'll get to it. I know you're trying to get out of here. With the credit repair stuff, just a question on that one. Is this, I think it's just one of their techniques to try to get you to stop, but I started running into now they're sending letters saying that they already investigated the stuff I'm disputing, so they will no longer investigate it unless I provide some other information.
Is that the credit bureaus?
Yeah, the bureau.
Send it out again. Send it out again and put insufficient response.
Okay, just keep, keep after it. Okay.
That's what they're doing. Because they, you know, y'all, what y'all got to do is change up the letter a little bit. Because what they do is they put those letters in to something, and if it comes out like a chain letter, they're going to treat it as such.
Right. Yeah, that's what I figured. I changed mine up from what yours actually, I mean, I didn't change the language up, but, you know, I changed it around a little bit, put my own flavor on it. But
right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Long as the laws are intact, you should be good. You know what
I'm
saying?
Right.
Just the law.
Kind of ends up adding that other one in there too, about not even qualifying for it.
Right.
Okay. That's all I have. Oh, you know what? Real quick, y'all ever check out that show, Trust? It's called Trust. It's about the Getty family and the, you know, them living in trust and all that.
No, I didn't know. I never heard of it.
Yeah, it's a good one to check out. It's a new show out. The season's over, but yeah, that's a good one to check out. They kind of drop a couple little things in there in the show, the course of the show. But,
Well, check it out.
Yeah, no doubt. It's on like FX.
All right. All right, brother. Right, peace.
Yep, peace.
All right.
Peace.
Peace.
All right, let's see. All right. Let's see. 419-785.
Hey, grace and peace, Hakeem. How you doing, brother?
What's up? What you got? What's your question?
Hey, man. Cooling, man. It's Ray from Penn State, man. Just chilling, man.
What's your question?
I know, man. Yeah. Hey, man. I went to court today, man, and I dropped off motion to dismissal, and they just basically denied it, man. This is my first time dealing with a court situation, man, and kind of they ain't give me no grounds on why or nothing, man.
Did you ask
like,
them what grounds? What did you do when they denied it? Did you ask them on what grounds?
Well, I gave it to the court.
Answer the question.
Absolutely. I got everything recorded, man. I asked, but she hung up on me, man. They like very disrespectful, man. And I'm thinking,
well,
like,
you handed it in.
I handed it in,
they gotta hear that on motion. You gotta go in open court. They can't just deny it. You know, they gotta
That's what I'm saying. I don't know what to do, man. I'm kind of like, I still got to get
that
traffic
ticket thing from you. That's why
you
get a consultation and somebody walking through it. And it ain't going to have, I mean, on the phone, I could only tell you, I don't even know what to tell you right now unless I know what they said. But they have to give you a reason so you can go back and appeal it. You know you can appeal that denial, right?
Yeah, the thing is, I didn't even get my trial yet, though. That's the thing. My trial is on the 19th, but I put that in early.
Listen, man. You keep cutting me off.
Oh, my bad, my brother.
I'm trying to tell you something, and you going off on something else. You can appeal that decision, and when you appeal it, it's going to take it out of that court into another court to see if that they made an error.
Nice. Okay, yeah.
Anytime you get a motion denied or you don't like something, you can appeal it. Y'all think that the case has to be over or closed, like the whole case got to be closed, and then you appeal. You can appeal any judge's decision at any time and say, notice of appeal. You denied my motion, and you didn't give me a reason why. Don't call right now. I need to know. They can't just say, I denied. You denied, and then move on, and then you just shit out of luck. No, they got to give you a reason so that you can appeal that.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, man. I didn't know that, man. Oh, man. I could appeal before the trial.
Yes.
That's what most corporate lawyers use, you know what I'm saying, to hold up lawsuits. They appeal every decision.
Yes. I know cases sat in court for 20 years before it even went to trial. Because they appealed all decisions. That if it didn't go in their favor, they appealed it.
Oh, crap.
That's how some litigation
came
in. I'm trying to say, y'all be wanting to talk and think so fast. You just told me you didn't know how to do it. So I'm showing you, and you want to talk. You want to talk over me.
I apologize.
Know why y'all don't know how to do it? Because y'all be talking over us when we trying to help you.
So I appeal it, man. Yeah. Yo, I'm going to set something up with you.
But
I
want to
get
more
deep in it, though.
They have to. Okay. They might try to pull this little stunt on you. They might just say, she might have told you verbally it's denied, but never seen any paperwork.
Yes.
That's not a denial.
Exactly. That's what I thought. I'm new to this, Akeem. I'm new, man. I don't know crap, man. This is my first time even trying to find a ticket.
That's why y'all got to understand what court procedure. I got a court procedure webinar right there.
Oh, man. You know what? I want to set up a consultation.
It has to officially be denied by a judge. And he has to put in an order to deny it. And why? And give his, they call it memorandum, points of authority on why it's being denied.
That's what I was looking for. Because I said, on what grounds? And then she hung up on me, my dude.
Because she lied, man.
And I called her back.
She lied.
Whoa.
Y'all hear something from these people.
Crap,
y'all get all up in arms and like you lost already. You didn't lose. That's a verbal, you're denied. Let me tell you, here's the thing. Clerks can't give you decisions over the phone. They tell you the decision will be mailed to you.
Wow.
They cannot give you law over the phone. They can't do that. They have to, it has to be told to you in court and handed to you by paper, by mail or in person. They can't just say, if you ask a clerk, what was the decision? They'll say, I can't, you'll get that in the mail. That's all I can tell you.
Wow. Yeah, I fell for it, bro. They had me going, man. I was stressing all day, man.
You fell for it. She verbally told you you're denied, and I'm denied. You know what? You know what you fell
for? But I asked her, though.
Let me tell you what you fell for.
I asked on what grounds, and she just hung up.
I know you asked her, but then she ain't the right person to ask. Know what you fell for? The okie doke. The religious okie doke.
Okie doke. Yes.
God looking out, and he's about to kill you if you don't do this right. Everybody's telling
you. I'm still going through this religious thing, man. I'm trying to get over it. It's like it got a hold on me, man. It do.
No,
it's Christianity thing, bro.
But next time you get something in the mail that's got you shook, or they tell you something that's shaky, just sit back and look at it for what it is. Who told you? did they have the authority to say what they said? Is there any lawful way to back it up? If she was telling the truth, right? Let's think about this. If she was telling you the truth, why'd she hang up on you?
Yes.
She just said, yeah, we denied it because this, that, and the other. First of all, she can't give you a decision on the phone anyway.
Yeah, she said
that's practicing law. She can't practice law and give you legal decisions or legal advice.
Wow. Yes, I'm appealing then, man. She said, I see you on the 19th. That's my court date. I see you on the 19th.
It sounds like to me like you're going to go to court and they're going to pretend like they never even got it.
I was going to bring it up, though, man.
I'm dealing with a similar case like that now, where they got the motion to dismiss has been filed, and they ain't filing it.
You know the funny thing, though, Akeem?
What?
I went there. Well, the first time I went there, they said, yo, we don't file nothing in here. We don't know where to put it at. That's what they told me the first time I went there. I said, this is evidence. You can't file it in here? They said, no, we don't do no filing. You got to bring it on your court date. I said, no, I want to put it in before the court date.
No, they got to file it, the clerk of court.
They got
you file anything. How you going? You fight your case before you even get to court. See, they try to
exactly
keep you up from filing, so you get to court, you stuck.
So I called back. I said, that don't make any sense. What you mean I can't file nothing in? And then they gave me the county, because this was a magisterial court or whatever, district court. Then they gave me the county number, and they said, call them. Maybe they could help me. Then I called them. They said, nah, they got to tell you what to do. So I called them back again, and they said, you know what? Just bring it. We'll file it. And it was, like, rough, and they hung up. And I went back the second time. And I asked them, like, here you go. And then they said they're going to do it. And I said, can I get, like, some type of receipt or something? They said, no, we don't give nothing. So I said, it's okay. It's all right. You know why? Because I have my glasses on that record stuff. I got my video glasses on. So I said, it's okay. I got proof anyway that I dropped it off to you since you want to give me the receipt. That's what they told me, that we don't give nothing. We don't give no type of proof that you drop anything off. I'm like, well, I said, I got it all recorded, man. I'm like, it's all good. And she said, you can't record me. I said, this is a public venue. I can record whatever I want to record.
Well,
that's what I told her,
and
I walked out.
Recorded. Yeah, because they're liars.
I got it all on video, man. It's all on video, bro, how they treated me, man. So so they playing games. I don't even think the judge even saw anything then. They probably just made all that crap up then, right? When they called me back and everything.
Yeah. It's all theatrics, my bro. All theatrics.
Yeah. But I didn't know I could appeal that
action.
But
you need
man.
To be getting private consultation.
Yes.
Every step of the way if you really want to fight this.
Yeah, I'm gonna hit you up, man. I need some help with this. Yeah, I appreciate the call. You're picking me up, man.
No. Dude. All right, brother. All right, peace.
I'm gonna get the traffic.
All right, I got you. Hello? Sorry about that. All right. I heard what you said. You're gonna get the traffic bundle. All right, peace.
I'm gonna get the traffic.
All right, y'all. I'm out. I'm getting grumpy. Gotta get off.
All right. Peace to the guy.
I ain't trying to piss nobody else off. All right, peace.